the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Whenever we hear about or think about trying something new, it seems easier to take that leap if we see or know someone who has already done it and been successful. Trying something new can be scary or challenging because it takes us out of our comfort zone. But when we do, we might find out things about ourselves that we didn't know before. We might become someone else's inspiration. We might realize that we were really missing out on something that now makes life richer and more fulfilling. This episode will hopefully inspire you to help dogs in need to whatever capacity you are able to do so. My guest on the podcast is Tom Keesh. He is a dedicated volunteer at his local Los Angeles City shelter. But Tom is not just a volunteer. He is an artist, an actor, writer, and producer with an extensive resume of projects all across the creative spectrum. He is a published author and also a teacher and advisor to university and acting school students in the Los Angeles area. He is a prime example and inspiration to us all because he has a full and busy artistic life, but still finds time to give back by spending time with shelter dogs and filming videos with them for his social media platforms. Those videos get seen and shared everywhere, and dogs get adopted. I am so moved by his well-informed posts and his journey that I had to have him as a guest so you can hear all about Tom's journey and how he is positively affecting the world around him. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm really happy that you accepted my invitation to be on the podcast. You are someone that I follow, you know, on Instagram, and I learned so much from all of your posts because you volunteer at a shelter and you show the dogs at the shelter each and every day. And if you're not there every day, at least you show multiple dogs on the days that you're there. Tell me about your journey as a volunteer at a Los Angeles City shelter. Which shelter, and what is that experience like for you?
Sure. I think I have to start this journey and tell you that it all happened because of a date that just wasn't going all that great. I was out with this girl for the first time, or woman, I should say. And, you know, she's a nice person and it was fine, but, you know, obviously she's not that into you. And she told me about this shelter that she was volunteering walking dogs. And I didn't even know that was a thing that people could do. So because I was in an apartment at that point where I couldn't have a dog and I've always loved dogs, I started volunteering at a place called the Amanda Foundation in Beverly Hills. And it was pretty cushy for a volunteer job. Like, they didn't allow you to pick up dog poop, or they all walked all the dogs at least once a day. But if there were volunteers, the volunteers sort of helped that out. And we weren't able to really deal with the public. So it was really just walking dogs. And I did that for a number of years. And then that place got kind of popular with volunteers, and dogs were going out like three or four times a day, which was awesome. But it wasn't close to where I was living. And a friend of mine down at the gym, I was telling him, and he said, "Oh, well, I volunteer at North Central Animal Shelter. It's part of the city. And our dogs aren't going out but once every 4 to 6 weeks." And that just blew my mind, that dogs stayed in kennels for 4 to 6 weeks. So it was closer. It was more of a challenge. And it was much more of a pain in the butt to go through all the steps of getting through orientation and the process of being interviewed and then training and then different levels. But I've been there for 5 years. And I started with bunnies, cats, rabbits, and hamsters, and then worked my way up to small dogs and then big dogs, and then challenging big dogs, which is where I'm at now. But all that's sort of been revamped in the 5 years that I've been there. which is great because now if you go there and you only want to work with dogs, you don't have to get training for bunnies, rabbits, all those things. You can just go right to dogs once you put in enough hours. So that's my journey of how I got to North Central Animal Shelter.
Okay. And for those people who don't know where it's located or they don't know the layout of the land in Los Angeles, can you give us a little background on what it's like in the surroundings, the numbers of dogs, the population around there?
Yeah. So North Central is one of six Los Angeles city shelters. There's city shelters and there's county shelters and there's six city shelters. It's located at 3201 Lacey Street, which is in Lincoln Heights, I believe it is. Lincoln Park, Lincoln Heights. It's over by that Home Depot and the 5 and the, I forget, maybe the 110 cross. Sort of in that general area below.
Is it more of an industrial area?
It is sort of an industrial area. It's right across from a movie studio, Lacey Studios. But yeah, it's sort of a whole warehousey industrial type area. And right now we have about 194, 96 dogs. It's fluctuating in there. Basically today, every single large outdoor kennel was taken and a majority of the large indoor kennels were taken. We have had a few open small kennels for small dogs. And then currently our puppy kennels are not functioning. I think they're in construction or something like that, but there's only a few of those and those aren't suitable for large dogs. So we're basically at capacity or near capacity, and we've been like that for weeks now. So there's a lot of pressure on the system, on the dogs, on the volunteers, on the staff, because more dogs means less dogs get out for walks because there's only so many volunteers that do that sort of thing.
Right. And that gets me to why I wanted to interview you. So I understand from the perspective of people who don't know anything about rescue or adoption that they may not want to set foot in a shelter, that for them, adopting from a shelter is either too scary or too emotional.
Yep.
How do you think we can appeal to people to understand, to cross that threshold of hesitation, for lack of a better term?
So that's a really good question and something that I've been asked before, and I've been asked while I was at the shelter, and I've had people coming to the shelter and not wanting to go into the kennels. Because they didn't want to have an emotional experience, or we call it the gauntlet because it's just loud and chaotic in a way. But the thing is, whether or not you can go inside the shelter or not is irrelevant. The dogs are still there, and the dogs still need to get out. And when people ask me, how can I do this? How can I just go in and walk dogs and just let them stay there? My answer is, what's the alternative? If I don't go in, then that means 6 dogs, 8 dogs, 10 dogs didn't get walked today. And over a course of, you know, a month or whatever, that's hundreds of dogs. So it's not like the people who volunteer don't have feelings and don't have empathy. It's just a lot of us just suck it up and move forward. And we know that it's happening whether or not we put our heads in the sand or not. So if someone comes to the shelter and I know they're uncomfortable, I can not have them go through the kennels and they can sit in a quiet room and we can bring appropriate dogs to them possibly. But it's also, I think, important for people to understand what it really is and what it's really like. And maybe if more people actually knew, then there'd be more funding and more staff and maybe even more volunteers because people would know. Like when I was in the gym talking to my friend saying, yeah, these dogs are going out 4 times a day. And he said, well, the dogs aren't going out, but every 4 to 6 weeks where I volunteer. Until that moment, I had no idea. I had no idea the staff wasn't walking the dogs every day. So until you go into the shelter and see it, I don't think you have any idea what 194 dogs looks like or sounds like. And it is crushing, but it should be crushing. And maybe if more people were crushed by it, we'd have less dogs in the shelter. I think a lot of people think it's some, you know, exotic getaway for their dogs, the way they just surrender their dogs so willy-nilly sometimes. Like they think their dogs are going to get out every day or two times a day, and they don't have any idea that some of these dogs don't walk. It walks but once every 2 weeks. We're lucky if we get dogs out once a week. And, you know, they're surrendering dogs that are 6, 7, 8 years old. It's like, who wants their 6, 7, 8-year-old dog? And they think like there's some magical adoption fairy getting these dogs out. And it's not, you know, some of these dogs end up going out the back door. And we know what that means. So while the shelter that I volunteer at, we have really dedicated volunteers and we have a pretty good networking system and we get a good number of dogs out, there are still dogs that don't get out for a year, 2 years. There's a dog named Pebbles that it took Pebbles over 2 years to get out of the shelter.
Meaning adopted, right? She would get out like walking and all that. But
yeah, she got rescued two plus years after she came in. And then she was rescued by Angel City Pit Bull Rescue. And then she went to Paws for Life Canine, the prison program, the training program, where she went for 6 weeks of training. And then she spent the rest of her years in foster care through the rescue. And she died in a loving home and out of the shelter. But I have no idea if her people knew when they surrendered her that she would be sitting in concrete and steel for over 2 years. Which is, you know, for a pit bull type, that's like 1/10 of her life. No, probably even more than that, like 1/7 of her life.
Yeah, I don't think people realize. And I know we have to have the city shelters, because if we didn't, then yes, we would have, you know, dogs roaming everywhere like foreign countries where we see that because there's lack of laws and animal protection laws and lack of laws for, you know, people for hygiene and things like that. But at the same time, it's not about throwing them in there and looking the other way and moving on, which so many people do. It's hard to advocate to people who don't want to volunteer, who don't want to adopt, who keep buying from breeders and pet stores or just want what they want and aren't willing to give shelter dogs a chance. So my hope is that at least through your experience, you can tell us about some of the success stories that astound you, that you go, who would have thought that this dog or that dog with that experience would have had a wonderful life once adopted from a shelter? You know, I have three of mine are from shelters and the other three are from rescue organizations.
Two things. First, I want to tie up what we were just talking about. And then I'll want to talk about some positive stories. I don't blame the shelters and the shelter system. They're a necessity. And like you said, in other places, they don't have anything and dogs are running free and getting hit and all that stuff. I just wish the public would have more personal responsibility about their animals, where they get them, who they get them from, the kind of dogs they're getting. You know, instead of asking yourself, what's the right dog for me? Ask yourself, who am I the right owner for? Like, just because you want a Belgian Malinois doesn't mean that's the right dog for you. You know, unless you're a marathon runner or a trainer or a search and rescue team, that's probably not the right dog for you. Probably. You know, you don't get a husky and throw him in your backyard and think the husky's going to be happy. The husky will figure out how to go over there, no matter which way over there is and over there far. And will spend its whole life trying to get out of that backyard and be stressed out and eating your furniture because he's stressed out. You know, so unless you are a marathon runner or a avid hiker, don't get an active breed like a husky. So once people stop getting dogs that are inappropriate, once people start training dogs from the very beginning, in, you know, if you get a mouthy puppy, when that dog turns into 100 pounds and still mouthy, now we're getting the dog because, quote unquote, the dog bites. Where it's the dog doesn't bite, you just taught the dog to be mouthy. If, you know, we wouldn't get as many dogs if people didn't surrender. We wouldn't get as many dogs if people microchipped their animals, because then we'd be able to get the animals out faster. When you microchip, you know, you get notified when your dog hits the dog shelter. So there's like a lot of things that we can be doing as society to lessen the load and lessen the pressure of all the dogs in the shelters. So that's the first part. That was longer than I thought it was going to be.
No, I love it. We want all the info.
Okay, good, good. like happy story. So today, actually, coincidentally, one of our longtime residents has been there basically since we reopened over a year. His name's Rocky. Rocky is like a 8-year-old blue pit. We're not supposed to really say breeds, but that's what he is. He's sort of a mixed breed with no teeth.
Oh.
He doesn't get along with other dogs off leash, but he does well around other dogs. He was so good that he went into a program called a Canine Youth Alliance, which is a program that takes dogs at the shelter.
Oh, yes. We know that. I know them well.
And matches them up with high school kids, and the kids or students teach the dogs, and they all learn together. So Rocky actually was one of the only dogs I ever heard of that did the program twice because they loved him so much, and he didn't get adopted afterwards. But anyway, Rocky today had his freedom walk, and he is now in the process of traveling north to Detroit, where he will then go to Canada and be someone's personal dog.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic.
And that literally happened this morning. I just posted a video of it this morning. So.
Oh, that's so cool. I have to see that one.
That is a success story, and that is probably dozens of people trying to get that dog somewhere, and networkers finding someone that was a perfect fit for him. And someone willing to pay for the cost of transport. So that's an amazing story, but it's sad on one side that Rocky had to sit in a concrete and steel for over a year and a half or a year, whatever it is. But at least it is a happy ending because it was getting close to saying, well, what are we going to do with Rocky? You know, and each dog sort of has an internal clock of how long they can take the stress. So most of them hold off pretty long for a while, but some of them don't. And I actually got bit by a dog on Saturday that sort of had popped his cork. Just can't take the pressure anymore.
Tell us about that, because I know that means with a bite record, I mean, their likelihood of getting euthanized is way higher, if not almost guaranteed.
Yeah, he has now had three incidences, and they each got worse, each with volunteers. And mine was the worst because he actually latched on, where the other ones were sort of nips.
Right.
So he's...
And you're okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a dog bite. It's not a big thing. So people make it so dramatic. I don't quite get that. But another dog named Azul. When I first met Azul, he snarled at me, and everyone was a little nervous of him because he was a big husky, kind of looked like a wolf. And I just basically told him, we're going to be friends, and that's the end of it. And I think I waited outside of his kennel for like 10 minutes and then entered, and he probably snarled at me again. I lassoed him with my slip lead and took him for a walk, and we became best buddies. And he was basically a magical dog for me. Like, whenever I had an incident with another dog, you know, that maybe tried to get me or just was acting kind of knuckleheady, I would always take Azul out. He would just, for whatever reason, that dog like was magical. He just chilled me out, and we all have our favorites. And nobody looked at Azul for months. Nobody ever came to the shelter. Nobody said anything about Azul until this family that actually adopted another dog named Jack from me years earlier called me and said, hey, we want you to know that Jack passed. And, you know, we had a great life with him. And with Jack in himself is an amazing story because he was probably a junkyard dog that then got adopted by these people who treated him like a king. So that was beautiful in itself. But they contacted me and said, do you have any dogs that you would recommend? And I recommended Azul and a couple other dogs. And although they didn't end up taking Azul, it was nice to see him interacting with other people. And then about a month later, through Instagram, a couple said, hey, we're going to be in Northern California, and we want to come down and meet Azul. We saw your video. And they did, and it was love at first sight. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. They fell in love with him, and they put him in their van, and they drove back to Colorado with him. And I get updates from him all the time, romping around in the snow. And he's living his best life. And so there's literally stories like that. I have hundreds of stories like that. So while a lot of these things keep going back to itself, but while it may be hard to go into a shelter to volunteer, because yes, there are dogs sitting there that need your help, which is why you should go there and help. But there are also amazing opportunities to feel things that you've never felt before. Like, I've been part of so many adoptions, and they don't all go this way, but a good number of the ones I do. It's when someone meets their dog. It's like nothing's really going on inside of me except I'm giving a lot of information and I'm watching the behavior between them. But then there's this moment that happens, and it happens more times than I would ever think, that something clicks and there's like a switch inside my body, and like I just feel it. And if you're around and you're next to it, I've seen people like well up in tears. And it's just the moment that it's that person's dog. And I usually say to them, I got bad news for you. That's your dog. Like, whether or not you take that dog or not, that's your dog. I'm not a salesperson, but that's a connection that means something. And I don't think it's ever proven me wrong. But it's just this, you just see it. It's the weirdest thing. And it can be like they're on the fence. And then for whatever reason, the dog like puts its paw on the person's knee, like perfect timing. And then you just see that person's reaction and you see the dog, and it's just like you feel a click, and like the water just starts building up in your eyes. Like as I'm watching, it's like, oh God, that's it. That was it. It's beautiful. It's amazing, you know? And some of the letters I get from people who adopted months later, or they, like I said with Jack, I got a note from them saying he passed and we just want you to know he had a wonderful life, and they kept in touch, and I get notes like that all the time, and it's a gift. Like, you think you're volunteering for someone else, but you're not. You're volunteering for yourself. It's a gift. It's taught me more about humanity and more about, you know, I make a living as an actor, and more about like being human and real emotions. Because let me tell you something, you're in a steel cage that's locked behind you and a dog is going off on you. There's nothing more real than that. Like, I deal with the harder dogs, so that's not like beginner stuff. But that's real, you know? And when you have a dog that meets someone, their future person, that's real. Like, it's just so amazing. It's amazing. It's a gift.
Yeah, I love that you see it that way, because I think so. And that's how I ended up adopting my own dogs that I adopted at shelters. It was never planned, and I never said, oh, I'm going to go and find a dog at the shelter. It was, you know, life takes you in directions, and you end up somewhere, and you have that moment, that connection, which is why I do not choose dogs based on their looks, based on an idea of what I've got in my mind. I want that and go find it. It's a connection that I have, a feeling, the look they give you, touching their paws. You know, I've said this in previous episodes. How can you rob yourself of that experience because you have some idea of what you're looking for? And then, you know, you might be missing out. So, and I want to share something that I've read on your post, and you can expand on this. I'm just going to read a little part of it because I find this really important. And sometimes I want people to read this, and I'm like, I wonder if people scroll all the way down and read all this great information that Tom is posting. But in a lot of the information after the dog's listing, you put information that helps adopters. And one of them says, lastly, how an animal acts or reacts in a shelter or with a particular handler or during an animal meetup is not 100% indicative of how they will act with everyone or in every situation. Educate yourself, develop your animal IQ, and ask knowledgeable people how you can best set up your new family member for success. Tell me when you thought that was important to put in your posts, and if you walk around spreading that message, because I find that to be so important.
So there was a dog that came in that was a rock star, just great with the handlers, great with other dogs, just, you know, literally we wrote down rock star, you know. And some foster people came in looking at her to foster her, and I helped them, and then a couple weeks later, I saw them again and helped them again with that same dog. And then I think I saw them a third time, and I said, "You know, don't. What's the deal?" Like, and they said, "Oh, we've seen her like seven times, and we think we're ready to make a commitment." It's like they saw her seven times or something like that, which told me some things. which I'll get into. So great. I think she's a great dog. She's done great with everybody here. So they take her. A couple weeks later, I go to a training workshop with Blue Man Dog. I'm there as a basically just watching, an observer. I know the people that run there, and I kind of like to brush up my skills too.
Yes, they're fantastic. We love Blue Man Dog.
And I see the guy get out of his car, and I walk up to us, and he looks at me. He's like, "I know you." And I was like, "Oh, I know you." And he said, "Oh, yeah, you know." I said, "Oh, yeah, you took the dog." And he's like, "Yeah." And then he said, "She's, you know," I said, "How's she doing?" And he's like, "Well, she's not doing good. She's not good with people. She's always nervous. She's always anxious. She's always blah, 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 all these negative things." So Mia, in charge of Blue Man Dog, says, why don't we get your dog first?" And so as he's going to get his dog out of the car, Mia turns to me and says, "Tom, I don't want you to look at the dog and I don't want you to react to the dog." Because I said, "That's not at all that dog. Like, that dog was not that way." So out of the corner of my eye, I see him get the dog, and the dog is reactive to everything, sensitive to everything, rollerblader or whatever, just sensitive, reactive, comes within 10 feet and gets a whiff of me or gets a sight of me and automatically just chills out. Then he walks up to the group. The dog walks right to my feet and sits down at my feet. And then I look at Mia and I said, "Now can I acknowledge the dog?" And she said, "Yes." And so I look down and acknowledge the dog. And the guy looks at me and Mia and says, "I've never seen this dog, but like, this is not something I've ever seen before." And then I realized him and his wife or significant other were nervous about the dog from the beginning. It took them 7 times to decide. They took a confident dog into a nervous house, which made the dog think, "Okay, why do I have to be nervous? Or I need to be the leader because they're nervous." And so the dog was acting out, protecting them from everything, every person, every dog. But when the dog saw me, the dog's like, "That's the leader. I can chill out." And the dog saw me, sat by my feet, and was like cool with anything we threw at the dog at that point. And then I realized, just because I have an experience at the shelter with a dog doesn't mean everyone's going to have that same experience. Because with me comes a confidence with dogs, dog IQ. I'm aware that a dog is constantly communicating with me, and I'm constantly communicating with them whether I know it or not. And I'm honest with myself. If I'm having a bad day, or if I just got stressed out because a dog did come at me or whatever it is, I know I'm smart enough not to go into the next kennel and take that in there with me. You know, we've had dogs come in and the people say he hates women. And the dog doesn't hate women. The owner might have hated women. And so the dog reacted to that. And we have people, you know, dog hates men. And it's like 5 seconds after I meet the dog, I'm like, "This dog doesn't hate men. It just hated the way you were when there were men around." And so I realized I'm showing dogs, and some of these dogs do have bite histories that I show because, again, I work or volunteer with some of the more challenging dogs because I love it and I think they all should have chances. But just because I'm having that success doesn't mean everyone's going to have that success, especially if they have a very low dog IQ and they think it's an iPhone and they can just open up it out of the box and it's going to be perfect. Like, people aren't perfect and dogs aren't perfect. And we have to learn how to read each other and communicate with each other. And, you know, it's as simple as that. So that's why I put that there. And I think the best thing we can do as a society is raise our dog IQ. That's the best thing we can do. I personally think dogs should not have licenses, but people should have licenses to have dogs, because I think there'd be a lot less problems.
Right. Thank you. Absolutely. And we've said it on the podcast before is, you know, they're a different species. We're trying to use the English language and our emotions to communicate with a different species. And they cannot communicate on the same level. It's our job to find a way to have clear lines of communication with our canine companions. I cannot reiterate that enough. And I have dogs of different backgrounds and ages and sizes, and they've all come from some crazy background, and they're all fantastic, and my bunch all gets along. And I'm not patting myself on the back for that at all. I'm saying it took work. One of them took us 9 months for him to not be afraid every time he saw someone and just pee everywhere. But we worked with him. It took patience, and it actually took us taking him out a lot to public places. People be like, oh, but he's so nervous. Why are you taking him out? Because if I let him sit in his fear, he'll always be that way, right? And I learned this through trainers, through watching videos, through reading books. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So challenge him, but let him know, hey, I'm in charge. I've got you. I'm going to protect you. You just go ahead and hang out. And we would literally take him to cafes and sit outside. And he was nervous, but I knew nothing was going to happen to him. So I let him in. And one day, it was like one day we had workers come to the house, and Tom, I had tears in my eyes because I was at first I'm like, oh, I got to put Hunter away. And the workers came in and didn't see him, and he went up to them to sniff them at their knees and let them say hello. And I get emotional saying it because it was so hard to get him there. But to see that, it was like, yes, Hunter, you're free. I felt like yelling it, you know? And this was a dog that was dumped on the side of a road in the middle of Georgia and had parvo. So, you know, he just had a long history. But when you get to live those moments, and to my listeners, I'm not saying you have to have this, you know, crazy dramatic story happen to you, but I'm saying if you give yourself a chance and you give a dog a chance, you might have an incredible experience that you'll be really grateful for in life.
I feel that's what I was saying about volunteering. Like you get the opportunity to have these amazing experiences just seeing people connect with animals.
Right, yeah.
You talked about like language, and we talked a little bit about language, but I tell everybody that will listen while I'm doing the adoption stuff that it's not the dog's job to think like a human. It's the human's job to think like a dog, because the dog's never going to come around to us. You know, we have to learn how to speak dog more than they speak us, and that's what keeps us safe. And keeps dogs happy. And like I said, they're always communicating with each other and with us. Whether or not we can read it or not, that's on us.
Right. They read our energy. They're so affected by our energy. Yep. And that's why it's so important for us to be prepared. And also, you know, if you're not ready, don't adopt. Please just don't get a dog if you're not ready, because it is a commitment. We want you to keep your dog. We want you to adopt from a shelter, but we want you to set yourself and that dog up for success, like all of Tom's posts say. And we're going to, you know, share those links in the show notes for this episode, because I really want to recommend that my followers and listeners follow your page, Tom, because it's just got great tips and resources. And maybe you know somebody at work. Maybe you want to recommend it to a friend or a neighbor, because sometimes us telling someone directly, like, they might not listen. But if we reference someone else or another professional, they might listen. So that's another way to affect positive change in this area. Tom, I wanted to ask you, just for anyone who's not familiar with sheltered terms, if you could explain to us what it means. Like, for example, if a dog has a stray hold, when it says rescue only. Sometimes the kennel cards say, and people think it's something else on the kennel card. I forget what the term is.
POS?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's a hilarious.
And
one.
People don't know what POS means, even though we do think what we want to say, you know, it's something else. But could you just run over those for us real quick?
So let me just say again that I'm not an employee of the city of Los Angeles, and my answers are just opinion. So if you want a legit answer that the city will stand behind, talk to a staff member. That said, I've been volunteering at North Central for 5 years. Stray technically means a dog that is found and does not have a microchip inside. A stray hold is about 4 days long. On the fifth day, the dog becomes available for public adoption. That's my understanding. So if the dog comes in on a Monday, 4 days later, people have 4 days to find their dog. On the fifth day, the dog is available for public adoption. And the reason why it's so short in the city or California, I'm not sure which one, but at least at the shelters, is there's so many dogs. And the pressure on the system is so high that if somebody comes on the fifth day wanting that dog, it's like the city's not going to say you can't have the dog. It's now the city's dog to adopt or foster out. A POS is, it's funny. It's possible owner. And that means that the dog was found with a chip inside. It's still a stray dog, but it's listed as a POS possible owner. And what that does is the city will then send a letter saying that, you know, the shelter has your dog. And then the clock starts 10 days from when the letter goes out. And on the 11th day, I believe, the dog is then available for public adoption and or foster or rescue. The term rescue only is for dogs that the city doesn't want to let out to the public directly. And that can be for a variety of reasons. One, it could have a bite history, or maybe it got out and killed a goat or a chicken or a small animal. And the city just doesn't want to have the liability when it adopts the dog out. So it uses a rescue organization that is, you know, insured or has nonprofit status. And then the rescue would then take the dog, and then the rescue would either put it into training or put it into a proper house for that dog. Rescues have much more time and resources typically to do better placing for animals. Rescues can do house checks, rescues can do background checks, whereas the city, somebody comes in, wants to adopt a dog, it's pretty much show your driver's license, pay the fee, unfortunately. We do our best to counsel, but they don't even have to listen to us. They can literally just say, I want that dog, and I'm taking a dog. So whereas a rescue can say no to people, they can screen, they can do a lot of things. So that's the term rescue only. Yeah, if people don't know, microchip is when you put literally a microchip in a dog's body, and it gets scanned when the dog's found by either a vet or a pet shop or a shelter, and then it goes to your information that you put on file. And I think the important thing about that is, just because you did it once, every time you go to the vet, you should ask the vet to scan your dog. And just make sure your information is current and the chip is still working. And the chip hasn't migrated somewhere where it will never be found. Because the chips can move. And so if the chip moves somewhere in the dog that's not a typical place that they scan, you might want to put a second chip in there.
Interesting. You know what? I should do that the next time I take my pack for their visit. Because I haven't had them scanned in a few years.
A stray will come in and they get scanned immediately before they go in. Then they go to the medical department. A vet technician usually scans them there, gives them a once over, sexes them, ages them, figures out if they have all their shots and all the vaccines and stuff. They go into the kennels, and then if somebody wants to adopt or rescue the dog gets scanned one more time before it goes out to the public. And that's just to make sure that they didn't miss the chip the first time. So in my opinion, you want to make sure the chip is easy to locate when you go to your vet and the chip has all the current information.
And when the shelter adopts out, so is it law, or is it like guaranteed that the dog will be spayed, neutered, up to date on shots and microchipped?
Yes. So at Los Angeles City, when you adopt a dog, the dog goes out with all its shots. They make sure that the dog will have nothing that brings anything into the community, you know, disease-wise. That's the once over. It comes with a microchip. The dog comes spay or neutered. If you choose not to have the dog spay or neutered, you have to apply for a breeder's permit. And you are technically supposed to have that permit every year. And that permit is somewhere in the $450 range every year. Literally just had this conversation yesterday with someone who wanted to redeem their dog. So when you redeem a dog, it means that it's your dog. You can identify it's your dog. You have proof it's your dog. And then the city gives you back your dog and you pay the redemption fee. But if the dog's not spay or neutered, you have to get it spay or neutered by the city, or then pay for a breeder's permit for a year. And somebody was on the fence about that. And they were talking about getting the dog spay or neutered anyway. And I was like, why would you pay the money for the breeder's permit if you're only going to spay or neuter the dog later? So anyway, I don't know what decision they made. I think they ended up having the city spay or neuter. But that's all what comes with the process of adoption. So
right. Which, you know, is a plus, you know, and I tell people that they're going to save that cost rather than going to buy a dog from a backyard breeder where you're not even guaranteed that the dog is not sick. I've had friends recently buy from breeders, despite my every effort to educate and spread knowledge, and sometimes beg people not to, but, you know, people will do what they're going to do. And one of them was very, very sick, and the other one is turning out to be a nightmare of a puppy, but they wanted to buy from breeders. So just so you know, even those of you who are just stuck on, I got to get from a breeder, you're not going to get a perfect dog. The dogs will all still possibly have ailments and behavior issues, and it really is still the same set of rules that applies whether you get a dog from a breeder or a shelter or a rescue. It's still our responsibility as pet parents to look after these dogs and raise them properly like we do human children, basically.
With the conversation about breeders, I'm sure there are reputable ones, I'm sure there are good ones, but the ones that I see are the ones that dump puppies after 6 months at the shelter. Dogs that didn't sell. They dump puppies. We had a Malinois the other day. I guarantee it was from a breeder. It's like shy and it's undersized. And my guess is they couldn't sell it. We had this woman and a man show up with a dog, a female dog with milk still in her teats. And she was, they were surrendering the dog. And you know.
No puppies.
No puppies. No. You know what happened, or at least I can theorize what happened. As soon as the dog's no use to them, they just dump it at the shelter. And that's what I know about backyard breeding. They don't care about what dog you're getting. Not, again, not all of them, but most backyard breeders are only in it for the profit. If dire wolves are cool, they'll breed white huskies and shepherds that should not be in a majority of homes, and they don't care. They just sell them, get rid of them, and then we see those dogs a year later because people had no idea what a husky entailed. Or now we have, like, I think a third of our shelter is German Shepherd types right now, or Malinois types, or working dog breeds.
I have noticed.
And I think it's just because, again, it's the dire wolf craze, or the maybe it was a movie about a Malinois. I have no idea, but, you know, those are not dogs for everybody. It was well before I started in dog shelters and stuff when the Dalmatians happened, the movie Dalmatians. But the Amanda Foundation, when I started there, had one of the last remaining live-action Dalmatians from the movie. And it was like 14 years old, and it had all sorts of problems. But they were the first people to tell me about that. Like, when that movie came out, they just had an onslaught of Dalmatians that people got because they thought they were cute. And not realizing...
People go on the looks.
What a Dalmatian is bred for and actually overbred for at this point. So,
And if I could just remind our listeners to share this with people that you know, if indeed you don't know this, but purebreds are prone to a lot more, you know, diseases and ailments as they get older. So get yourself a mutt. Tell people to adopt these beautiful mutts or mixed breeds because they will be sometimes some of the healthiest and actually most personable dogs that you could possibly get. Think about that. You know, a lot of people get stuck on, I got to have a purebred, and you're asking for a lot of vet bills and, you know, potentially just a lot of issues. And at least right now when we have overpopulation, you know, why go after trying to get more from a breeder?
Getting a dog should not be a selfish act. It shouldn't be an Instagram opportunity. It shouldn't be a status thing. It shouldn't be an accessory thing. It should be a selfless thing because you are literally dedicating the rest of that animal's life to your care. That's what it should be. It shouldn't be about what color the animal is or, you know, how it looks in your shoes. It should be that it's the animal you want to take care of for the rest of its life. Because that animal deserves that.
That's true. Yes, thank you, Tom. So even though Tom volunteers at the North Central Animal Shelter in Los Angeles, I do want to ask my listeners to please look in your local shelters or find out if they have volunteer opportunities, volunteer programs, weekend events. Sometimes they have spay neuter clinics, free vaccine clinics. There's all kinds of ways that cities are trying to use the available funds to help minimize the overpopulation of dogs. Unfortunately, sometimes the resources go unused. Believe it or not, there are budgets for them, and if they're not used up, they, you know, It's not like they're going to take them to like push them on us. If they're like, oh, you don't want to take advantage of a spay neuter clinic, the spay neuter clinics stop. So I really just want people to know that there is more help out there than people are sometimes taking advantage of. And Tom, on that note, I wanted to ask you where people can find and follow your pages. What social media networks are you posting the dogs on so people can find you?
Sure. Just so everyone knows, I didn't start out wanting to be a dog person. I'm actually supposed to be an actor and a writer and a producer and a singer. But the dogs, they're like my passion right now. And that's, I feel like I'm doing something good with them. It's like a purpose. Anyway, I guess I post them on my personal Instagram page, which is at Tom Kieche, T-O-M-K-I-E-S-C-H-E. And then I have a Facebook page that I post the dogs to that often just I just auto copies over to the Facebook page. And then on my personal page, I have a there's just a information page on dogs because I got so many people asking me questions and there's only so much that people can absorb during the adoption process that I just created a web page that literally has everything that I normally tell people who are either looking for dogs or who have just adopted a dog or just took a dog into their life. And I just wrote it all out. So it's there as like a leave behind for people so that if they get confused, they can look at it for resources. And then there's a bunch of resources on there. And that's on my personal page, which is www.tomkieche.com. But the easiest way to find it is go to Instagram, go to the Linktree link, and it's one of the links on the Linktree link. So
perfect. Okay, yeah. And I'll have those, you know, I will have those live links in the show notes. So anyone who wants to scroll down on this episode can easily connect with you, Tom. It's really cool how the podcast setup makes it really easy to do that. I will also say this to my listeners. You should know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any one organization or individual on this podcast. I choose to interview guests that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America. Thank you, Tom, for all the work that you do and the knowledge that you're willing to share selflessly, because again, you're an artist, you're an actor and a writer and producer. And I know that sometimes when you leave, everyone's like, oh my God, Tom's going to leave the shelter for however many weeks. People are commenting, when will you be back? What's going to happen to the dogs? So, you know, it's like we're following you too, because your journey is quite interesting and very inspirational. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And just let me thank you for having me on here and for all the work you're doing. And it really is like, this might be talking to the choir, preaching to the choir, but hopefully the choir turns around and preaches to all their choir. And maybe by the third or fourth choir, we're getting people that have not heard this stuff. So I think it's important that I say this, and I hope I said it clearly and wasn't too fast or too passionate. But what's more important is that the people hearing this then educate other people and they educate more people, because we just have to take the pressures off the system, because animals are just beautiful, sensitive, intelligent creatures that if we're going to put them behind bars and in concrete, we need to take better care of them. We really do.
Yeah, that's why so many of us advocate for right now. We're not saying never breed again. We're just saying stop overbreeding so we can take care of the ones that are already here that didn't ask to be born just to live on a concrete floor behind bars.
So we can catch up and breathe for a second.
Yes, yeah. Right? So Tom can take a vacation guilt-free. I see you have a kitten with you, so I wanted to mention that. I've noticed that very selflessly, you don't have a dog because you devote so much time to all those who need to find their forever home. Talk to us about that decision and the fact that you have a kitten with you.
So I think I said earlier that I started volunteering with dogs because I wasn't allowed to have dogs where I lived. And that was the same thing where I live now. I wasn't allowed to have dogs. And I literally have hundreds of dogs every year that I love, that I care for.
Yeah.
But this cat just came around one day and I basically wrote a one-man show about the whole thing. But he just was basically like, I'm going to live here. And then he was in an indoor-outdoor cat that I shared with the neighbors and, at that time, the woman I was living with. And he got attacked by four coyotes one night. and disappeared for 4 days. And then on the fifth day, he came walking down the sidewalk like nothing was happening. And then the vet said he's not allowed outside for 10 days, and he's never been outside since. And the girlfriend no longer lives here. The neighbors have moved to Palm Springs. So now he's my cat, and I absolutely love him. I have him trained like a dog. He sits on command. He kisses on command.
That's fantastic.
He like walks across my shoulders. So he's treat motivated. His name is Timothy Oliver Gabin, Professor of Chaos.
Oh, we love that. He should have an Instagram. But you don't have time for that.
He tells me that I give the dogs too much attention sometimes, but he's okay with it too.
Oh, God, I bet he can smell the dog on you every single day you come home, right, when you volunteer?
Oh, yeah, he loves that. He loves it. And he loves dog biscuits.
So. That's so cute. Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you for, again, inspiring us and sharing all of this. And we hope that our listeners will find and follow you and learn and spread this message, because sometimes those of us on this side of the conversation feel like this is all we can do and keep doing and keep hoping. And maybe one day we won't have every single shelter full of homeless dogs.
I hope so. I just want people to join the good team, you know, join the team that's trying to do good.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for this conversation. I so appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know that many of us, myself included, find it hard to step into a city shelter because of what we might see or hear. But I have done it, and have always walked away knowing that it was a better choice than never having gone inside. So let's just for one moment humor me, if you will. Take the pressure off ourselves that our heartstrings will be tugged at and that it will be too emotional or that we have to adopt. Let's imagine that in a city with millions of people and one shelter with 195 dogs suddenly gets 195 people to take time one day out of the week to go volunteer. Think about the difference in the energy and the happier, calmer environment that would create in that one shelter. All dogs would get walked. The staff would have time and be able to perform all tasks and then some. And if 195 different volunteers showed up every day of the week, all dogs would get walked every single day. And if 195 volunteers showed up to each of the six city shelters in Los Angeles, for example, that's 1,170 people a day volunteering out of a population of 3.9 million people in Los Angeles. Only 1,170 of us have to volunteer one day a week, and we would see the system change for good. I promise you. And if you live in a smaller city or a smaller town, that's even less people that need to volunteer because the shelters sometimes are much smaller. I hope we have planted a seed that maybe you will consider taking that step. Grab your friends or family members, get trained to be an approved volunteer at your local city shelter, and make a difference for a dog in need. As Tom reminded us, it will feed your soul in ways you can't imagine until you do it. Plus, you are preparing somebody's future best friend and life companion by allowing them to be more adaptable, happier, and adoptable until that perfect match comes along. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please press subscribe on our podcast and tell all of your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes. The Canine Condition. Come, sit, stay.